So I don't want you to think that white trash morons get distracted or anything, but we worried about getting our thoughts down into a management plan, a written management plan, so we could document both the condition of the ranch when we got it, what we envisioned the ranch looking like in 10 years, 20 years down the line, the improvements that we thought that could create that transformation, and how we could monitor that progress toward achieving that goal. So a very wise man once said, what you got, what you want, what you gonna do, what you do, and did what you did do what you wanted. So a large part of our written management plan is included in that range beef cow symposium proceedings paper. And as we wrote the plan, we decided that we would constantly be measuring our progress, but assess it in a five-year time span. And if we weren't going in the direction that we wanted to after 5 years, we would reevaluate and maybe try something else. We also felt like the document was an informal contract that we would hold ourselves to, and our partners would be able to have a clear understanding of what our goals were. They'd be able to address those goals and whether our goals fit into their goals. We don't like to think of our partners as federal or state agencies. We try to think of them as being a proxy for the constituents that they represent. So our partners are always representing hunters, bird watchers, or the parents of children that are swimming downstream in the Belfouche River and want clean, healthy water. We think that by addressing wildlife habitat and water quality issues on the ranch, thinking about our native plant inventory, the landscape, and trying to run a sustainable cattle operation at the same time, the management plan has opened up a two-way conversation between us and our partners that constantly goes on, and that we all benefit from whatever approaches that we agree on. So as part of that two-way conversation, we also decided to send out a year-end report every year, and that would let our partners know what we did or what we didn't accomplish. It would let them know how many cattle we were running, if it was more, if it was less than the previous year, a brief description of maybe how the riparian was and the upland were reacting to certain management treatments that we applied to them, and how the whole overall system had responded, including what impact the latest climatic occurrences had been on the ranch in the last 12 months.
Thanks, Al. Matt, you've been perhaps most closely involved in the implementation of the plans at the Wind Ranch. So if you could describe the ongoing development of the partnership and how that implementation has proceeded.
As I mentioned, within a year or so of owning the ranch and getting the general feel for it and finding out some things like that flood you guys saw, some things that they were dealing with that you don't realize when you're buying a place. And as we started getting partners together, it was good to see. I would bring them some ideas. They would go to Steve. They would go to SDSU Extension. They would go to NRCS. Get feedback from them and try to apply that. And it was interesting to see that every time I came back out, how things would modify. There was a point in time that I thought Al was crazy, but fortunately Simone's good cooking and is a little more grounded that it kept me coming back. And it was, when they put together the management plan, you know, that was the biggest thing we had to keep in mind, is it was adaptive because it seemed every year something new was happening on that place. And it was paramount to the success of their system and their operation to involve all these other partners that have dealt with some of these issues in the area.
Thanks, Matt. Steve, tell us how and why the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service was able to contribute to the development of the plan, and if you would also, how South Dakota Game Fish and Parks was able to be an additional collaborator.
Yeah, I think I'll answer the second part of that question first. We were supposed to have a panelist up here from, representing South Dakota Game Fish and Parks. Our state wildlife agency has a habitat improvement program that's very similar to the one administered by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. We collaborate on many projects together and refer folks back and forth all the time. So when I speak about our program, you can it's really pretty interchangeable with the South Dakota Game Fish and Parks program. We have very similar goals and philosophies. Back to the first part of your question, and really the question is, why do wildlife agencies want to be a part of projects like this? Like I mentioned, grassland conservation is the primary focus in this part of the world. Here, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service's trust resources or trust responsibilities are waterfowl and other migratory birds, primarily anyway. These grassland nesting birds do quite well in the habitat that we have in western South Dakota. And as their habitat is lost in other places and it's fragmented, they have fewer and fewer places to nest and reproduce. But really, the Northern Great Plains has remained a pretty strong, much a stronghold. They still do quite well here. We still have a lot of habitat, and so our goal is to conserve that habitat. We encourage this conservation of grassland through our program and through short-term landowner agreements. These are designed to improve the grassland wildlife habitat as well as be a benefit to the bottom line of the livestock producer. An example would be we cost share pipeline and tanks and cross fences, infrastructure needed by ranchers to better manage their livestock herds. This also then improves the health and vigor of the grassland species. Thus, it's providing more cover for grassland nesting birds, but it's also providing more forage for the livestock. So it's really a benefit both ways. Other practices that we participate in, riparian fencing, wetland development, native grass restoration. With specific reference to the Wind Ranch here, when I came to the table, most of their cross fencing needs were planned out. Their water development, everything was kind of taken care of, but they were looking for some assistance with some riparian fencing. They showed you pictures of the degradation that had occurred on those riparian habitats on the two major creeks that run through their ranch. And so we were able to come to the table with some financial and technical assistance to implement that practice. The goal of our riparian fencing program is to give landowners the tools they need to limit the timing and duration of the livestock use on those riparian areas. We're not asking exclusion. We're still utilizing the forage. We're just doing it in a way that's most beneficial for that functioning system to return. And that's kind of important from our perspective. These particular projects, I feel it's important to have models of this sort on the landscape that demonstrate that wildlife and other natural resources can thrive while we're still maintaining a viable livestock industry. I think they're not mutually exclusive. They go hand in hand, and that's the big take-home message that I want to put out there, is that the needs of grassland wildlife are almost identical to those needs of livestock in this part of the country. They need grass, they need water, and they need security. And we're in the business of trying to keep those things on the landscape.
Thanks, Steve. Mitch, if you would, tell us a little bit about what NRCS expects or what outcomes you might anticipate from some of the practices that Al and Simone have implemented.
Sure. Thanks, Roger. I think first, by installing the well-distributed and reliable water sources and installing the cross fence as well to develop some of these smaller pastures that we were looking at, the livestock distribution will immediately be improved, and a lot of the concentration areas that we usually see in these larger pasture areas with singular waters, that'll definitely be minimized. And whenever you can get a water source for livestock, especially in a grazing situation, anywhere in that 3/4 of a mile range in distance, they don't have to walk too far, you're looking at a good situation for livestock distribution. And we think about grazability a lot, too. The grazability of that pasture is increased, or how much of that pasture that can be used by livestock is actually grazed. So you definitely improve that grazability function. And then when you start to think about the water quality, we had some pretty dry years in the past few years. If you've got that good quality, reliable water, your grazing plan can be implemented as designed during dry years due to the reliable water. If you've got no water or a serious water quality issue in ponds and dams or only a limited number of good tanks, then that creates a situation where just select pastures are grazed during those drought years. And then thinking about increasing the number of pastures, that's kind of there to help to optimize the amount of time that those plants have to rest and recover after a grazing event. So we decrease the number of days grazed in each pasture and increase the number of days of rest in each pasture. So what we're doing there is we're building a lot of plant vigor. And also through a rotation type system like this with multiple pastures with one herd, you're eliminating those fields that are grazed at the same time of year, year after year after year. And so that's building plant vigor as well. And then with that rotation, those shorter dates, we're reducing the number of times those plants are bitten, rebitten, and rebitten again. It's more based on recovery. As far as the specific changes that they've already seen or that we can kind of expect to see regarding plant species composition, sometimes one of the plants we'll start to see that'll come in there will be one of the taller grasses. They've been looking for some taller grasses, possibly some of the deeper-rooted perennial cool-season bunch grasses like we have green needle here. That's usually a grass that disappears with heavy grazing use. Probably we'll start to see some of that, but I think more than that, just a general plant health and vigor improvement, you know, a greater ground density of grass, the soil surface much better covered with plant litter and dense plants on the ground. I think there, too, the western wheatgrass should become a thicker and more productive stand over time, and obviously you're going to improve livestock carrying capacities. In other words, you're going to have the opportunity to start jumping those stocking rates up just from a productivity standpoint. And then from the riparian improvements, I think they've already seen some improvements with some of the armoring of the riparian areas. The creek bottoms are grassing in. It'll probably continue. Hopefully over the long run, maybe some more woodies will start to come in. Keep that up, a few more shrubs, maybe even some trees, start to inhabit those drainage areas. But the winds aren't only really developing a healthy plant system with healthy roots and deep roots that penetrate deep into the soil. They're also developing what we look at as healthy soils, too. And those healthier grazing land soils, they provide a lot of products like increased water infiltration with rainfall events and decreased runoff. That's a big deal. And increased organic matter as well, and that's going to increase the stability in the soil and something else I'll talk about a little bit later. But also an active microbial population, then that's an important thing we're finding out more and more, because those microbial populations are those little bugs that recycle all of those nutrients that are stuck in the soil and makes them available to plants. And so soil health is a big deal, and it's important. Just think about it. For every extra inch of water from rainfall that we can infiltrate into the soil, that'll grow us another 150 pounds per acre of grass. And now there's a lot of talk about how much organic matter can help as well. For example, a 1% increase in organic matter could mean up to 1,000 more pounds of nitrogen in the soil. So those are some pretty big numbers, and they're pretty staggering too. But I think at the end of the day, this management that they've adopted is going to maintain their grasslands with deep, healthy root systems, these vigorous plants that can tap soil nutrients and moisture. And they're going to be more resilient during drought, but they're also going to be able to optimize their production during normal or above better than normal years.
Thanks, Mitch. Alan, Simone, you're making progress on implementing this plan. Has that translated into changes in livestock production?
Short answer is yes. We started with 120 pair in 2007, and with the help of moisture between 2007 and 2011, we went from 120 to 160 pair and maintained that number through the drought of 2012 because we had so much stockpiled forage. We cut back this year to 135 pair because of the ongoing drought, and we got moisture really late. But what makes those numbers a little more interesting is that because of the faith these guys have in us, we decided that we would exclude the pastures that were fenced in with the riparian areas. So of the 3,000 acres of grazing land we had, we were only using 2,300 acres of that range ground. The county grazing average is about a pair per 20 acres, and we're currently running a pair per 14 acres, even with that excluded acreage. So we think we can improve upon that when we get our remaining 700 acres of grazing range back into the mix. Our hay yields have gone up also. We went from 1.25 tons to almost 2 tons an acre. The creek erosion has slowed down. The channel is starting to shallow up and change from a deep, wide U shape to a shallow, open U shape in places. And we're getting some willows and a few young trees, and they're starting to establish themselves. Prairie cordgrass is really on the rebound, and it's dominant throughout the hayfield creeks and the overflow channels, and that's helping to further stabilize the erosion. It hasn't all been sunshine. We were severely damaged by the 2012 drought, and our plants have been slow to respond. We've experienced 300-year flood events this summer alone, and we have some new channeling and erosion problems on our bottoms. Economically, it's still really tough, and the last 2 years with the drought and the floods and this October's blizzard Atlas, it seems like we're taking 3 steps forward and 2 steps back. But we never expected it was going to be easy.
I did. So our partnership, our real functioning partnership, has really been with Matt Stoltenberg and the Belle Fourche River Watershed Partnership, NRCS, Game Fish and Parks, Fish Wildlife Service. But there's two other groups that we depend on quite a bit in our partnership, and one of them is the SDSU Extension. So Roger and Ken Olson, Julie Walker, Adele Hardy, Mindy Hubert. I mean, there's just so many people that have been involved in coming out to our place when we have a question, looking at the process that we're going through, making suggestions. So that's been a really vital link, and we wouldn't have made much progress even in the partnership without that additional technical help that we get from Extension. And the other group that really needs to get some recognition in this is the South Dakota Grassland Coalition. Through the grazing school that they put on every year, through the seminars that they hold, through their newsletters, and those events. The Grasslands Coalition has been kind of a really good silent partner for us and for everyone else that's involved in the Grasslands Coalition in the state. So any progress that we've achieved over the last 7 years is really due to all those parties. So thank you very much.
Steve, if you could tell us about your impressions of changes in the habitat that have occurred while Al and Simone have been managing this property.
Yeah, let me start to answer that by saying that really we don't have the staff or the capacity to go out to each project that we participate in and do in-depth surveys that measure changes in habitat or changes in wildlife populations. Instead, we rely on research that's been done that really tells us that what we're doing is a net benefit to wildlife and other natural resources. That being said, visiting the Wind Ranch early on in Al and Simone's ownership, and then obviously visiting it more recently, it's very obvious that things are going in the right direction. As they've shown, there's much more grass cover. The riparian systems are starting to heal. So definitely going in the right direction. But some of that stuff, especially those riparian systems, are so degraded that it's going to take a long time. The proper functioning of that system may be tens or even hundreds of years out, depending on the precipitation and a whole host of other factors that come into play. And our philosophy is to recognize the management that has led to that degradation, assist in changing that management, those decisions, and then letting things heal over time as they should. One other kind of sidelight, I guess, that it's kind of a measure of success in my perspective. I don't know. Al and Simone have always been pretty in tune with what goes on their ranch, but when they talk to me now, they relate wildlife observations and relate that to some of the habitat improvement projects that we've been doing. Whether some of those species that they're finding on their place have always been there and they're just recognizing them, or whether the habitat improvement projects that we've put in place are encouraging those new wildlife species to show up. Both ways are a success, in my opinion. So,
thanks, Steve. Matt, Al and Simone have referred to their commitment to measure lots of things, and that includes some of the monitoring of the landscape. So tell us, you've been involved in that process. Tell us a little bit about that process and your impressions of the landscape.
Yes, and I think quite a bit of this has been hit on, but one of the things, as they had mentioned, it's very important to set up a monitoring system to see a measure of change in what you're doing. I helped them set up some photo points, set up some repeatable transects to see what was changing, and some riparian monitoring. One of the instances that I saw some dramatic change, and I think sometimes it's hard for them day to day when you're out there every day, and you folks know this from your own operation, it is hard to see what's taking place out there. But for instance, I've seen in one of the areas right by the headquarters, was traditionally used as a place to kick the cows out after they had calved, and it got hit pretty hard. You saw a lot of blue gramma mat, short grasses, and after a few years and of utilizing this in a different way, you saw a lot more western wheatgrasses, and the productivity of that area was increased. That, along with some dramatic changes on the riparian areas, and as they say, there still is some erosion out there. There's some issues, but these are naturally, as all riparian systems are, very dynamic. But you can see these systems, you know, are going to change no matter what, and it can take several years to see changes on them.
Thanks, Matt. Mitch, if you could tell us briefly how the monitoring information can help inform the ongoing management plan.
Sure. Well, for me, grazing monitoring is basically broken into two different categories. And the first one is basically an operational type of monitoring. That's the stuff that we almost see every day. It's the things that we're always looking at. One of those might be livestock utilization, you know, something that happens during a specific time. We use that information to make on-the-fly decisions, maybe move to the next pasture because this one's getting eaten down a little bit. Another thing with that maybe is droughts emerging as we're watching droughts and we're changing plans because of an emerging drought during the spring and summer. That's kind of operational as well. Matt was talking about some different type of things that maybe are a little bit more strategic and not operational. These are things that happen over the long term. It's changes that are fairly slow. Things like the amount of bare ground, or as Matt mentioned, they had some blue grama mats out there, and through monitoring, you can see those mats change over time, but eventually, hopefully, the blue grama begins to go away, and we see an increase in the more productive western wheat grass. You know, a lot of people look at weedy species or undesirable species that are decreasing, or are the cricks and the drainages improving? That's something that a lot of people will take a look at, too, and I know they have here. Also, stopping erosion. But really, if you're looking at all of these different things, there's so many different things and attributes on grazing land to look at. But it really helps define if the objectives that are in the conservation plan are being met. You know, for example, if you've got problems with riparian areas, an extra fence might be able to be installed there if it's just still looking a little bit too beat up. Or if we've got utilization issues up in the uplands, maybe another fence, maybe an extra tank might be something that could solve that if it's just not meeting your objectives yet. And really from a management perspective, this is watching things fairly closely on the ground, more plant-related. You know, you might need something like rest or continuous pasture deferral if you've got low vigor in your grasslands or those grasslands just haven't seemed to respond quite right. This might take a little bit of time for those things to come back, or might need to adjust stocking rates up or down. Sometimes that's the answer, but it's purely objective-oriented. And then, obviously, productivity, that's a major concern for most operations, especially when you're looking at, are we meeting our potential productivity on this grassland, and is there anything else we can do better to try to achieve that potential productivity? And I kind of always like to think about it like this, but if you know what you want and what's possible and how you can evaluate it, monitoring provides all of the essential information for the re-evaluation of the plan. So it's important, and I think, especially in their case, it's going to buy them a lot. And finally, with monitoring protocols should always be based on your goals and objectives. It's not fun to go out and monitor for fun. Always do a technique that's going to tell you an answer that you need to know. And it evaluates and measures if you're meeting your objectives. And pretty much all monitoring methods that we've run across can be tied to a goal or an objective that our producers have come to us with.
Thanks, Mitch. I've highlighted the importance of the Northern Great Plains grasslands. At one point, this was all grass, and it was a very important source of a reliable source of ample and clean water. I'd like to share a quotation with you that highlights the importance of conserving these Northern Great Plains grasslands. And I realize I'm between you and supper, but if you'll bear with me, I'd like to read it so you don't miss it. Disappearance of a major natural unit of vegetation from the face of the earth is an event worthy of causing pause and consideration by any nation. Yet so gradually has the prairie been conquered by the breaking plow, the tractor, and the overcrowded herds of man, and so intent has he been upon securing from the soil its last measure of innate fertility, that scant attention has been given to the significance of this endless grassland or the course of its destruction. Civilized man is destroying a masterpiece of nature without recording for posterity that which he has destroyed. That was written in 1954 by J.E. Weaver, who was one of the early and most important contributors to the science of rangeland management. The public has demonstrated that they value these lands and are willing to invest in beneficial management. I hope we've encouraged you that there are folks that are interested in the good stewardship that ranchers have historically provided to the rangelands and are interested in partnering with you. And we hope that you'll consider forming some of those partnerships. If you would, help me thank our panelists, but particularly the Wind Ranch for sharing their story with us and excellent work that Simone did in putting together the presentation. So help me say thank you.